All right, good evening. I'm calling to order this public meeting of the Clark County Historic Preservation Commission on a special night. It is Monday, June 14th at 6 p.m. My name is Sean Dennison and I am the chair. We have a special meeting tonight to discuss the Preservation Commission's comment on the SEPA process for the boiler, laundry, and smokestack structures at the Providence Academy historical site. Since we have a very brief agenda tonight, we will still offer an opportunity. We'll do roll call and introductions. We'll have an opportunity for public comment on anything besides this agenda item. Then we'll discuss this agenda item and give opportunity for public comment on the agenda item before adjourning at the end. So I'm going to start with roll call. Andy.
Here.
Greg.
Here.
Julie.
Here.
Michelle.
Here.
And is Feli online or is she still?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I haven't been able to identify her.
I'm good.
Okay. All right. And then city and county staff who is on the line, would you please introduce yourselves? Let's start with the county staff.
Hello, my name is Jackie Camp. I'm with Clark County.
Hi, my name is Dan Somerville. I'm also with Clark County.
All right.
Hi, my name is Oliver. Oh, sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
I believe that's all of our county staff. So let's go ahead and move to city staff.
Hi, my name is Jason Nortz. I'm with the city.
This Mark Person.
Mark Person.
Go ahead, Mark.
Planner. Then Keith Jones is next.
Keith Jones, also with the City of Vancouver.
And Greg Turner with the City of Vancouver.
This is Becky Rood with the City of Vancouver City Attorney's Office.
And Philip Gigler with the Vancouver City Attorney's Office.
And our two representatives from the city attorney's office, can you let the commission know? I know in the past we've had one attorney who's assisting the commission and another attorney who might be assisting a different part of the process. If there's that distinction tonight, can you let us know which is which?
Sure. Philip again. So I'm here on behalf of city staff. So any questions that city staff has, I'm advising them. And Becky is here to answer any city-related legal questions that the HPC may have for us. So she's here to answer your guys' questions.
Great. Thank you very much to both of you. Do we have any other city or county staff on the line that we missed? All right. Well, we have a quorum, so we will be moving forward. The commission will be able to take a vote on actions. Before we get into our one agenda item for the night, do we have any public comment on issues other than our agenda item? I just want to always maximize the opportunity for public involvement. Jackie, do you have the slide for raising your hand? They're going to need that later anyway.
Okay, good practice here. For those that would like to make comment to the Historic Commission tonight, please use the raised hand icon to indicate that you would like to speak, and that's if you're using your internet. If you don't see it, you need to click the participant button icon to find the hand icon, and then staff will acknowledge those who have raised their hand by selecting that. When you're acknowledged, you will be unmuted, and please limit your comment to no longer than 3 minutes. And when you have finished your comment, please click on the raised hand icon again to lower your hand. If you are calling in by phone, please click on *3 on your number panel. That is how you raise your hand. You'll hear a message that lets you know that you've done so. And when staff acknowledges you, you'll be unmuted and you'll be able to provide your comment. Again, please limit to 3 minutes. And then again, when you're finished, please hit *3 again to lower your hand. Okay,
all right, thank you,
comments?
Jackie.
Yep.
And this is comments outside of our agenda item. Jackie, it seems like we have none.
Yep, not seeing any.
All right, so we will move on to our main agenda item for the evening. So I will be recusing myself from the commission discussion for this agenda item. I will be offering public comment. So our rules and procedures give the chair the ability to designate someone to fulfill the chair duties if they are unable. Since I will be unable as recused, I will be appointing our vice chair, Andy Gregg, to handle this agenda item. And I believe Jackie will be placing me in with the participants. So Andy, take it away. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. My name's Andy Gregg, and I'm the vice chair of the Historic Preservation Commission. I'd like to invite public comment on our agenda item this evening before we proceed with further deliberation on the part of commission members. So Jackie, would you please see if there are any individuals who wish to make comments at this time?
Okay, it looks like we have a hand raised, Andy. I'll go ahead and unmute Sean.
Please go ahead.
Okay, well, let's see. Hold on. There we go. Go ahead, Sean. It looks like you're unmuted.
All right. Can you hear me all right?
Yes.
Okay. Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to offer a comment on this issue. Before I get into the meat of my comment, I do want to really encourage you to really stick to the role that you have available to you in this process, recognizing that it is different than the processes that you might undertake otherwise, that your opportunity is to comment on whether or not the mitigation being offered in this mitigation plan is sufficient to make it so that the adverse impacts of this demolition are not significant. That's the finding that we have before, well, you have before you, is that the impacts are not significant due to the mitigation. So that is the thing that you can really impact. And I'd also like to encourage you to offer your comments for the laundry and boiler building and the smokestack with some distinction between them, since these are separate issues and something that might be sufficient mitigation for just the demolition of the laundry and the boiler building may not also be sufficient mitigation for the smokestack. So to make it clear whether or not when you think it's not significant for this additional adverse impact. Overall, I would really encourage you to consider that the mitigation plan that's being offered is not sufficient to sufficiently mitigate the adverse impact so that they are no longer significant. I think that the mitigation plan as offered does not actually address all of the adverse impacts from this act, nor does it address cumulative impacts on the site, which are within scope of a SEPA analysis. And I sent a letter earlier today that really gets to the heart of this, that there are site impacts, impacts on visibility, impacts that are related to the fact that this is the last smokestack of its kind in Clark County, and also the last piece of St. Joseph's Hospital that's related in the smokestack. And also to raise the issue of precedent, we have seen through this process that the Historic Trust engaged in demolition by neglect and used the deterioration that occurred under their stewardship as the basis for obtaining this demolition order, to and that it was related to development. And the SEPA process does allow you to consider precedent as part of the adverse impacts. And this example is a huge adverse impact that we could see other historic building owners who want to develop their sites encourage. I also want to bring up that a lot of what is in this mitigation plan doesn't provide any additionality. The archaeology requirements, the archaeology pieces are already required by state plan, state law. The revised nomination really doesn't provide any mitigation. What it does is provide risk management for the trusts to prevent them from losing their national register status. The Aegis II mitigation elements are for Aegis II, not for the laundry building and the boiler building and smokestack. And some of the material salvage, not all of it, but some of it is really about cost reduction for when they do repairs. So there's a significant portion of this mitigation plan that doesn't actually provide additional mitigation for this action. So in my letter, I've provided a series of what I think are recommendations to meet that minimum standard of what it would take for this mitigation to make these adverse impacts no longer significant. I hope that you will consider them when you make your recommendation. I hope that you are very clear about what you think needs to be included. Don't just get a laundry list of items that they could consider, but really establish what it would take to get over that minimum threshold that the adverse impacts are no longer significant. And I would like to say to the city that seeing this plan actually happen is a very serious concern. We've seen mitigation plans not come through. We've seen real concerns in the mitigation plan about economic stability of the historic trust. So I would really like to see this mitigation plan be encaptured in a development agreement or some other similarly binding mechanism that makes sure that no matter what, this mitigation plan actually occurs. I am happy to answer any questions about any of these now or later. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Sean. I'd like to invite additional comments, Jackie.
No other raised hands at this time. Does anyone have any other comments in the audience? Click on the hand icon, or if you're calling in, *3. Not seeing any, Andy.
Okay, thank you, Jackie. Appreciate that. We'll now move on from public comment. This concludes the general public comment portion of the meeting. I'd like to move on to our agenda item, the SEPA for the boiler, laundry, and smokestack structures. Discussion on comments the commission will submit for the SEPA regarding the demolition of the boiler, laundry, and smokestack structures at the Providence Academy site. And so at this time, I would like fellow commissioners to comment on the issue. And for the record, I'd like to say that I reported to Jackie the recommendations Michelle and I concluded as a part of our subcommittee that dealt with this issue. And so she's in possession of our three suggestions that we also aired at the previous June 7 meeting. So any others?
Andy, I just wanted to let you all know, I'm going to have Dan share his screen. We've put those onto a slide so that you all can see what they are as of from the last meeting, and review that and then add or change as we go. Does that work okay with everybody?
Oh, great idea. Thank you for that.
Okay, sure. And I think he's got also a couple pictures in case, you know, we need to look at it. So go ahead, Dan. I'm going to go ahead and make you presenter.
Okay, thank you. All right, I'm going to share my screen with everybody. Can everyone see my screen all right?
Yes.
So this is just, as Jackie said, a brief couple slides to help tee up the conversation here. So there we go. So to start off, I took a few screenshots from Google Earth to give us a little bit of a visual perspective on the spatial elements of where the buildings are located on the site. So as you can see, the three structures in consideration on this SEPA are the laundry building, smokestack, and boiler building on the right-hand side of the screen. And then this is looking at it from the opposite direction, looking southwest. So on the bottom hand of the screen, smokestack is on the left, the boiler building adjacent, and the laundry building to the right. So I brought these up, commissioners, at any time, if you want me to bring these back on the screen, if it's helpful for your dialogue, happy to do that. The dates of important right now, of course, just recently on June 11th, the City of Vancouver issued a notice of mitigated determination of non-significance regarding the application to demolish Providence Academy laundry and boiler buildings. The public comment for that SEPA is effective from June 11th through 25th. So our comments, meaning the comments on behalf of the commission, if the commission chooses to submit any, are due to the city by 4 p.m. on June 25th. These are the draft recommendations that we've recorded so far. These come from comments that were stated in our previous meeting on June 2nd, as well as email communications that commissioners sent to staff following that meeting. So there's 7 recommendations that I've condensed here. In short, these are, so far, listing the 3 buildings, the smokestack, laundry, and boiler buildings on the Clark County Historic Register, completing the HABS documentation for the 3 buildings, collaboration between the Commission and the Historic Trust staff to effect the most effective mitigation program possible, including a more detailed inventory and plan for preserving and or reusing the historic materials from the 3 buildings, enlisting individuals meeting federal minimum professional standards for preservation professionals to implement the mitigation plan, adding protection measures for the remaining cultural resources, as well as a legal obligation to repair or reconstruct any damaged structures or elements to the mitigation plan, and making the mitigation plan binding through a development agreement with the city or other equally binding legal mechanism. So from here, I can leave these up on the screen. I can write them as we discuss. I'll leave that up to you to let me know what is most helpful for you. But I think at this time, I'll start with including your most recent recommendations up on the screen, and let me know from here what I can be most helpful in these visual aids.
Thank you, Dan. That was really good. Appreciate it.
So, Dan, I'm just going to chime in here. So, complete the HABS for the 3 buildings. I think when Andy and I came up with our recommendations, we were pretty specific that HABS needed to be completed before the demolition took place. So could we add that into that second bullet point there?
Sure. I will. All right. Do you, Michelle, add this to both the first 2 bullets?
The second bullet, complete the HABS for the 3 buildings before demolition takes place. Because they were saying in the mitigation plan that they would do it within 180 days of the demolition having taken place, but we want it to take place before the demolition takes place.
Yes.
And just a clarification on that. Are we concerned with just submittal of the materials or actual completion of the review and acceptance of all of the materials as complete in terms of satisfying HABS requirements?
You know, I would say that they need to have acceptance and approval from HABS before the demolition takes place. That's, I think, Andy, do you think that that's where we were kind of headed there?
Yes, I think more than just completion of the survey, that the that it's been finalized and recorded.
That it does need to have some sort of approval with it from HABS before demolition takes place.
I understand that there's a concern that that process could take some time and might impact the or might, you know, delay any action that might be contemplated. Is there any consideration of maybe requiring some type of pre-application conference with the folks that are reviewing the HAB submittal and getting their preliminary feedback to make sure that the submittal meets all their requirements, at least informally, before it's actually submitted? And would that be potentially sufficient on our end, or do we want to actually wait, regardless of how long it takes, for the actual HABs review to be completed?
For me personally, I would be in favor of the HABs approval having to be complete before demolition takes place.
Yeah, I agree with that, with Michelle.
Yeah, in an ideal world, that would be great.
And the intention is simply because there have been, it sounds like, cases across the country that demolition occurs and the mitigation measures like this type of documentation fall to the wayside and don't actually get implemented. And this will guarantee that doesn't happen. That's, I think, was the purpose with that clarification.
I suppose if there's some unreasonable delay occurring, that the applicant could come back before the commission or the city and request some modification to that timeline if they needed to.
I have a question about that, actually, probably for the legal team, in relation to, you know, I understand that the city has made clear that the decision for demolition lays with them and that the HPC is simply advisory. So going back to Greg's comment just a moment ago, would they be, you know, would they come back to us and would there be that dialogue, or do they not need to do that? Is it just, this is really the only opportunity for us to comment on the mitigation steps that have been proposed and make our voices heard in relation to that, and now they move forward how they see fit? Or do they have some obligation to take into account the things we're going to comment on?
This is Becky Rood, and I can speak a little bit to that, I think. Julie, with respect to the laundry and the boiler room, that process is completed in terms of the demolition approval, but it's subject to the SEPA review and conditions. And so your opportunity to speak into that process is as a public comment through the SEPA review and this public comment time. With respect to the smokestack, that demolition application is obviously part of the July 7th hearing, and is also simultaneously subject to, sorry, I've got some noise in the background, subject to a SEPA review. So even, for example, on the smokestack, even if the Historic Preservation Commission said, yes, you can demolish it, if the SEPA review process said that it couldn't go forward, it wouldn't. But the conditions that are put on both, sorry, the conditions that are put on them are separate.
And maybe if I can ask a follow-up question, it's still not clear to me what action the commission will be asked to take on July 7th. Is it advisory, or are we actually going to be taking a formal action on whether to approve or disapprove the demolition of the smokestack?
That is a formal action, and I only recently joined the city, so I'm kind of catching up to speed. So I expect to have a pre-hearing memorandum outlining that process that will take place at the July 7th meeting in terms of the standards that are applied and the commission's decision-making process with respect to that. But yes, that is it's a public hearing and a decision made by the commission.
I just have a question for the city staff, if that's okay. Is it your practice to have a third-party review of a mitigation plan like this by an appropriate professional or team of professionals, just so that we can get some additional expert input on something like this before we come to a final conclusion?
Hi, this is Jason with the city. For mitigated determinations of non-significance, no, it's not common practice. For larger like environmental impact statements, it might be. But for something like this, that has not been our common practice. But I also am not the one that typically prepares these. It would be Keith or Mark as planner. So I'll defer to them and see if they have any additional information to add.
Yeah, and my question wasn't really about the preparation of the environmental document itself. It was really focused on whether it makes sense to the city to have a third party review of the proposed mitigation plan component, which is really the substantive part of the entire document.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, hi, this is Keith Jones, senior planner at the City of Vancouver. To try to, I guess, address that question, we do have some third party reviews that we can access, including archaeology. And then we have an intergovernmental agreement with the county in regards to wetland and habitat reviews. But we don't have necessarily any third party review that has to do with historic. You know, we've typically relied on this group as our expert board to review historic applications. And in typical cities, the city usually issues a determination of non-significance on most applications that are submitted. So it's not something that we do often to issue a mitigated determination of non-significance, but given, you know, obviously the importance of this site, the importance of what's going on, we did spend a lot of time working with the applicant to get their document to the level it is now. We've also reached out early to the Department of Archaeological and Historic Preservation and asked for their comments. Those were submitted early. I know we were before this group, I want to say in November, bringing these before you, knowing that this was coming. So at this point, we're at this stage where we've issued the MDNS, and as was stated, the comment period is up to the commission if they want to comment, and we will consider any comments that are submitted very seriously, and we will amend the SEPA if we believe that it is specific and directed and will be able to be enforceable. And we will issue the final determination following the comments that we'll be receiving by the 25th. And then that will be appealable to the Vancouver Hearings Examiner, who will then, if it's appealed during a 14-day appeal period, can then hear the determination. And again, the determination is on the if it's an environmental impact that is significant. And there was also a checklist, an environmental checklist that the applicant submitted that goes through a series of things that are related to the environment. And really this comes down to, of course, the historic preservation of the property. And so that's where we're here today. And we're it looks like we have this subcommittee meeting to discuss that. And certainly staff will consider any comments that we receive within the comment period.
I can just follow up on that. In addition to the benefit of having a third party review of the mitigation plan, there's a specific component of that, of the applicant's submittal that talks about the infeasibility of various potential measures to preserve the smokestack. And a lot of the infeasibility discussion is basically dismissed by reason of economic infeasibility. And I don't see any documentation that's been given a third party review by an appropriate professional that would examine those assumptions about economic infeasibility other than material that's been provided by the applicant. So I guess it's just another procedural question. Does the city typically just rely on the applicant's professional analysis when we're looking at the feasibility from an economic standpoint of a certain action, or is it appropriate to bring in an outside professional to take a look at that?
Yes, this is Jason again. Thank you, Greg. That's a great comment and something that we've talked about briefly as well. And yeah, I think that's something we're willing to consider based on, again, the types of comments that we get back. So yes, thanks for the comment.
And it kind of goes to the heart of whether this project is eligible for a determination of non-significance. Because if you accept the applicant's premise that it's just economically infeasible to preserve the smokestack, then you basically are automatically, you know, kind of led to the discussion of mitigation. And we haven't really had a discussion of whether avoidance of the impact is feasible, other than the applicant's presentation that they believe it's not feasible. And under CEPA, I believe, you know, the first obligation is to conclude whether or not avoidance of the impact altogether is feasible. And if that feasibility, as the record stands right now, is just based on information from the applicant about the economic implications of preservation, it doesn't seem like we have a balanced analysis of that issue right now in the record. Just an observation.
So Jason, this is Michelle. I just want to follow up on Greg's comments a little bit there. So Jason, what I think I heard you say is that possibly once the comments from the CEPA are gathered, the city might give some sort of consideration to bringing in a third independent party to examine the economic costs of rehabilitating the smokestack. Is that an accurate interpretation on my part?
So I want to make sure I understand your question correctly, Michelle, but so you're focused on just the smokestack and the economic feasibility of retaining that, or are you speaking to something else?
No, I'm speaking to what Greg is speaking to. Greg is saying, you know, we have seen from the applicant that all they've said in all their documentation, particularly with the smokestack, is it's not economically feasible to retain the smokestack or to save it. And so we've only have their opinion of that and their analysis of it. And I think what Greg is saying, would there be any sort of third party in this process, in this comment process? It sounded like you were saying that the city might try to find some sort of an independent analysis whether the economic impact of restoring that smokestack. Is that a possibility?
I think that definitely is a possibility. A lot of it would depend on. Yes, sorry.
Is my audio working? I kind of cut out there a while ago, and I think I'm back.
Yes, it is. Thanks, Philip.
Okay, this is Philip with the City of Vancouver, and I just wanted to interject here a little bit because I think I'm concerned with the direction that the meeting's going and the questions that staff are answering at this point, because I think we're getting closer to the substance of the economic feasibility hearing that the HPC is going to have on the 7th. And I don't want us to get into that at this point, mainly because it's not on the agenda. I don't want the commission to run afoul of the OPMA, the Open Public Meetings Act. And I don't think anyone at this point is prepared for the substantive issues that are going to be before the commission on the 7th. So I really just want to try and direct us back to the CEPA discussion, if we could.
And Philip, we will have an opportunity to look at a second SEPA. Is that correct regarding the smokestack?
No. So the SEPA has been, the trust has decided to submit the boiler and laundry SEPA with the smokestack SEPA. So these are now essentially all three together. But of course, if this commission ruled on the 7th not to issue a demolition permit, then whether or not the SEPA happened or not wouldn't matter. And then it could potentially be appealed from there. So, but currently they're all three linked together as one.
And so I guess that's why it's a little confusing why we cannot discuss the smokestack if it's part of the SEPA review that we're reviewing today.
Oh, no, you absolutely, in my opinion anyway, can discuss the mitigation measures on the smokestack. But it sounded like we were getting more into the economic feasibility of repair of the smokestack, which is essentially the core or the substance of what the hearing on the 7th is going to be.
Well, I think what we were doing is trying to understand whether there's been an adequate analysis of whether the impact can be avoided altogether. And the applicant's position is that it can't be avoided because it's economically infeasible. And so then we've been led into this mitigation program, assuming that the smokestack will ultimately be demolished. So I think there's definitely a connection between where we are now and reviewing the mitigation measures and then having a discussion of whether avoidance has been adequately considered and whether more consideration of the feasibility of avoidance needs to occur before we move forward with the mitigation discussion.
And Philip, this is Becky. You can correct me or amplify if I'm misspeaking, but my understanding, Greg, is that the SEPA determination is not about whether a demolition is appropriate. It's just addressing mitigation in the event demolition is approved. And so I think that's where Philip is trying to keep the conversation on what should the commission's comments, what my understanding of the purpose of this meeting is, are there comments that the commission wants to put forward through the SEPA public comment process regarding additional environmental mitigation considerations, which maybe the commission wants to put forward the SEPA should look more closely at the whether or not the economic costs are appropriate, but the SEPA evaluation is not deciding whether demolition is permissible, just what environmental impacts need to be addressed in the event demolition occurs.
I'd like to refocus our discussion at this time and ask, is the demolition of the two buildings, the boiler facility and the laundry facility, that's been approved, is that correct?
That's correct.
And our purpose here then is to offer suggestions as to how the foregone conclusion of the demolition might be mitigated in terms of capturing a historic record or the HABS inventory, or to have some kind of, I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase it. We want to make sure that the spirit and essence of these buildings is not lost forever.
That's my understanding, but they're also, sorry, Andrew, there, and this is where maybe Philip or staff can speak more specifically to the SEPA process, but my understanding is that SEPA could potentially have an outcome that says, oh, the environmental impact is too severe under demolition. So when I just spoke and said SEPA isn't deciding whether the buildings can be demolished or not, it is looking at whether demolition can go forward given the environmental impact, even though the demolition is, you know, constructively approved. If the environmental impact is can't be mitigated, then it couldn't theoretically go forward. But that's probably a question better answered by staff in terms of this, the SEPA impact.
Thank you.
So, you know, I just like to chime in here for a minute. I think one of the reasons, I think one of the reasons why we needed to have the meeting tonight was because, you know, Greg brought up some important points at our last meeting, and all the discussion about mitigation measures, if the smokestack is approved for demolition, all the discussion from the last meeting, we didn't have a discussion about what mitigation measures could be for the smokestack. So I think it's really important that one of the things we try to put forth tonight is, you know, if they do get the approval, if approval is given for demolition of the smokestack, you know, what would be those mitigation measures that we want to put forth?
Can I, this is Julie, can I also back up just a little bit and make some formal comments regarding the mitigation plan for the boiler room and the laundry? You know, we did discuss it last week, of course, and we have this list in front of us. And given that this entire, as part of this meeting, is to kind of finalize those comments that we want to submit regarding the SEPA, I do want to just formally state that, you know, I really don't think that the mitigation plan as it currently stands is sufficient. And that,
Julie, you mean the one submitted by the trust?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So the plan that they have put forward thus far, and I think we all agree, and that's why we're meeting, and that's why we're coming up with this list of things, but I haven't stated that. So I just want to say, I don't think that that mitigation plan is sufficient, and that the impacts are going to be significantly adverse. And so what we put in this letter is going to be really important. And I think that we've touched on a few really critical things. So just to recap really quickly, so the Clark County Historic Register for those three buildings. I'm also curious about that fourth building, the gymnasium. There was mention that, you know, there is concern with the different proposals for Aegis 1 and 2 and potentially 3, that could also then encroach upon the gymnasium. So I wonder if we want to expand that and say as much and cover as much of the historic property as we can, and not just limit it to those buildings. That's one kind of clarifying item. I also, let's see, I'm just looking at these and I just feel like they need to be fleshed out just a little more. I agree about the HABs and, you know, getting that in place before demolition, but I also want to speak to the point that Sean has made multiple times as a member of the public, but I think it's really critical that we do strongly put forward that they need to have certain professional standards and that people with the right qualifications are doing that documentation collection. And I know that they have an archaeologist or they have an individual that they have assigned to do that. And it's in the proposal how many hours she's going to devote and so forth. But I do want to emphasize that all across the board for all of the different activities that are in this plan, and that it not just be lip service, and that it also has like a very concrete qualified structure of individuals who can do the most to fulfill those roles. I think also, you know, I had mentioned, and it's in here, to have an inventory to identify what additional historic materials are potentially salvageable. And they do mention that in the mitigation plan, saying that it's basically it's unsafe to go into these buildings and do an inventory like that. And, you know, they kind of go through the details of that. And so I would like to just, you know, there's comment here about, you know, people purchasing historic materials and things like that I had mentioned last week. But I don't want to necessarily take that away, but I think that if we have people that are professionally qualified to make comment on how this demolition is going to occur and what needs to be salvaged and so forth, that would be a critical piece, not just the demo people deciding, or even, you know, oh, save those bricks, but don't save those bricks. I think there needs to be an actual professional involved in identifying and putting forward those pieces. And in the proposal, it just simply said, oh, they'll be salvaged during the demo. And I just don't think that that's even remotely suitable. I think that there needs to be more to somehow identifying that inventory and thoughtfully and professionally extracting them so that they're not damaged. And then the professional standards are mentioned in here as well. And then the, let me see, I'm sorry, I'm just going through the list here that we have in front of us. The mitigation plan, making it a binding agreement, I think that's really critical. And then the remaining cultural resources, can we discuss that? Add protection measures for the remaining cultural resources. Is that what we had, what I had mentioned earlier, the gym? Is that what we were talking about on that particular bullet? Or is there something further that we were trying to articulate in this memo that we're going to respond? Can anybody speak to that particular one?
Well, Julie, I wonder if that one right there about the protection measures for the remaining cultural resources, what I recall in the reading was if the boiler building's taken down, mm-hmm. and the smokestack comes down too. We weren't planning on that. Okay, that's just what happened. Right. I think that's what that refers to.
Oh, okay, good, good. Perfect. Okay. And then, you know, I think that there was another really powerful, thoughtful comment put forward. And I think that these comments, actually, I would like to propose that these proposals for recommendations, that we seriously consider using them in our letter. That was from Sean, to be honest. I don't know if that's acceptable, but I don't see why not. I think that we all, our thoughts and comments are reflecting what's in here. But one that I think hadn't been mentioned before that I think was a thoughtful recommendation is that even though the boiler and laundry are slated for demolition, that there are other methods in order to do some preservation and to maintain those building footprints. And there's some recommendation in there regarding that. And I think that would be a really, you know, since our back is pretty much against the wall, I think that this would be the most minor of things that could be proposed to help maintain some of this historic heritage that we're losing. And then I think those are the things that we've talked about and would like to incorporate into our message regarding the two buildings we know are going to be demoed. And then for the smokestack itself, I think we've talked about preserving the smokestack, seeing what we can do to ensure that that isn't demolished. And and other mitigating measures, but I think that right now, as things stand, I just don't see that the mitigation plan really is robust enough and addresses this loss that we're experiencing as a community enough, and that we can do more. And I think some of these comments that we've made tonight and we're discussing tonight need to really be strongly written and put in this letter to make it clear what our expectations are.
If I could add to one of Julie's points, I think it was a great point about the process of demolishing these structures. A lot of jurisdictions will require a formal deconstruction plan that's prepared by, licensed professionals, architectural historians, the engineer that's overseeing the project, et cetera, and they go into a great amount of detail as to how they're going to take apart these structures and determine, what's going to be preserved, what's not, how it's going to be handled, all of those things. And, we can rely on the wording of a sentence or two of a mitigation measure to some extent, but when you're talking about a resource, historical resource like this, that's so important to the region, it seems like we should go the extra mile wherever we can to make sure that that the mitigation measures are carried out the way they're intended to be. We require a deconstruction plan that's subject to review and approval of, at a minimum, some higher level of city staff to make sure that it's meeting the intent of our mitigation. I think that would be much more comforting than just relying on one or two sentences in a mitigation measure to express our intent.
Yes, and that's exactly right, Greg. You said it well. That's the intention of what we're saying too.
So I think if we can just add some language in our comments about requiring a professionally prepared deconstruction plan for any of the structures that are removed, that ensures that the intent of these measures is fully satisfied. That would something along those lines.
And I think that that also is complementary with the professional standards that we're asking be employed through every step of this phase, and that that person, if that is the steps that they take, that they have a preservation background, they understand how to do a demolition plan with a historically significant structure, not just a person who knows how to do a demolition plan, but they actually have that historical expertise to know and understand how to do such a sensitive project.
So
is someone catching some of this?
I have a question. So in that deconstruction plan, so would the intent of that, would be to have a deconstruction plan that takes it down in the proper manner, documents it in the proper way, and then would a portion of that be in that deconstruction plan, how those materials taken down, the next step is how they are used? Is that also included in that?
That's my thought. I know we had discussion before. I know they mentioned that, there's some dispute about whether or not it's part, really a mitigation, is that they're using these bricks for repairs and landscaping and so forth, but that there's further purpose that they could be employed for. There's other things that they could be used for, and there's more protection of those materials rather than putting them into a landfill. So yes, I think that would be, those two would go hand in hand, that not just the deconstruction of these historical buildings, but that there's also that extra layer of ensuring that these fragments that we're taking down, that the knowledgeable individual can see how and what can be preserved, and then what else is unsalvageable, if that makes sense. But I think that that's kind of part of that whole piece of not just demolishing the building and saying, well, we said we were going to demolish it and we demolished it and we saved a couple of bricks or a couple hundred bricks. There's actually a plan about what to do with it.
So I don't know what you all think, but as I was kicking this around in my mind, if they do come forth with, if somehow a demolition is approved for the smokestack, and I do truly hope that that's not the case, but my understanding is if demolition is approved, then this is our chance to say what the mitigation measures of that demolition is. And so one of the things that I was thinking about, they talk in this plan about a scaled down natural or artistic sculptural representation of the smokestack. And I just don't think that that's really going to really be a true representation or a true, you know, do justice to that smokestack. And so one of the things that I was kicking around is if we do have a really good deconstruction plan by someone who is truly qualified to do that, and those things are preserved, would it be possible, because I think that the smokestack is about 90 feet high, would it be possible to take some of those materials and reconstruct a portion of the smokestack? Like maybe reconstruct a portion of the smokestack up to like 20 feet high, and you wouldn't even have to reconstruct the whole round portion of the smokestack, maybe just like half of the wall, so people could see what the actual smokestack really looked like and get an idea of the size and the scale and the materials that were used. That was one thing that I was kicking around in my mind, to, you know, to reuse those materials to still have some sort of a representation of what had once been there if demolition is approved.
I unmuted myself to say I like that idea. It's hard for me to swallow the idea that it's going to be demolished. So it's hard for me to forward think or think forward. And so, you know, I think that the comment that, you know, now however uncomfortable it may be to hear it, I do think that we're in a situation where, you know, we're demolishing because of neglect, that we're demolishing because there wasn't proper stewardship over these important historic structures. And so I think we're in a position where we're having to think of the worst possible scenario. And it's hard to do at this moment when we're going to have an opportunity on the 7th to, you know, it sounds like allow or not allow demolition, though I'm not entirely clear on our authority on that piece.
So before we move on, I just wanted to kind of recap and make sure, Julie, was there, and when you were kind of going through your points there, is there anything you want us to revise on the slide
or add? You know, I mean, one thing I would like to ask is it possible to incorporate other people's comments into our overall letter? And if so, would the other commissioners agree to incorporate the comment? They reflect what we have here, but they're more fleshed out with details. So I'm curious if the commissioners, and if that's acceptable. If that's the case, then I would say that this captures it for the moment, but then we would use that other document to flesh it out.
Julie, I think it's entirely acceptable because as a commission, we are representing a constituency. And right. Even members of the commission are part of that constituency.
Yeah.
Just some have more opportunities for input than others. But I think that regardless of the source of a good suggestion, we should incorporate it. And it seems to me we would miss a good opportunity if we didn't seize a fine suggestion and include it. It's not as if we're taking credit for it.
Yeah, well, and we have everything pretty much here on this slide for the most part.
And remember, there will be others who will be submitting comments on the SEPA. And right. So ours will be one collective voice among many who will be sending in information.
Yeah.
So this doesn't rest solely on our shoulders.
And one other just small question, and I don't know if it's the time frame is too short, but are we going to be able to just do a quick review of this document before it's sent? Or are we just after this meeting just releasing it and it's being written and sent on our behalf? Or
We could do a motion where its action could take place following a final review. So you could build into the motion the idea that you would accept the draft recommendations proposed subject to a final approval that would have to take place before the comments are due to the city.
Right.
Jackie, would you say that'd be a reasonable plan?
I'd want to check with Becky. I don't about just kind of process and actions by the commission. Whether are you taking like by email? Like you all would approve it by email? Is that what you mean?
Well, I think that the draft recommendation that we could conclude tonight would probably have just about all our points.
Mm-hmm.
And that if it would be more a matter of form and style as opposed to substance. And so it would be, how does it look? You know, prioritizing which points come first, those kinds of approvals.
As the four of you or five of you, Feli?
Yes.
Becky, do you see any issues with that?
Well, it's tricky for me to speak to because this is really a question for the county to deflect too much responsibility, but I'm really just here to interpret the city code, you know, and I not speak to the regular or administrative matters of the commission, but my speculation would be it. One option might be, since there is a, it sounds like a subcommittee was already formed, that if there was a delegation of finalizing the draft and submitting it on behalf of the commission, and that authority was delegated to the subcommittee and approved by the commission, that may work, but I am speaking somewhat out of turn here.
Right. That's essentially what we have in front of us here.
I'll clarify too that my approach in the compiling the draft text that's on the screen at this time is was intentionally condensed and made to be more concise to be put up on the screen. So these are not word for word the text that each of you provided last week or an email. I tried to condense it. So I was intending that our, or at least my understanding of the objective today would be to get, you know, a decision on these recommendations as, I guess, in the gist of them. But then, as you said, Andy, in terms of making them into a more formal sentence structure or sequencing them, that is what I understood would be something that would be in a more formal letter format following this. But as far as if it's decided as the committee or as the commission, I think that's up to you.
So I had asked at the beginning of the meeting about the first bullet regarding the three buildings being put on the Clark County Historic Register. And can we clarify that since two of them are going to be, you know, demolished? So what are those three buildings we're talking about besides the academy? Are we talking about the academy, the gym, and the smokestack? I don't know if anybody knows those three that are part of this. So I just want to make sure we're covering everything. But
as I recorded it from our previous meeting, it was the smokestack laundry building and boiler building, but that can certainly be amended.
Well, I think,
I mean, we can, yeah.
I do think that when Andy and I talked about it, we talked in terms of the entire academy site on the historic register. I think that's what I had in my mind, is that all the buildings and, you know, the grounds and everything are listed on the Clark County Historic Register. That's what I had in my mind, Andy. I don't know if you can speak more to that.
I thought that it was the entire property because, of course, the smokestack laundry building and boiler building are part of that campus.
So my question there is, so it's the academy site. But I guess my question is this a little too little too late? I mean, even if it's put on that register, they're still going to demolish. Not that I'm opposed to putting, you know, making this at all. I think it's a very critical recommendation, but I'm just curious. Is it just that we're trying to put, you know, we're trying to get what's left on the register? That's our ultimate goal, is to get that acknowledgement that this needs to be on the Clark County Historic Register. because the National Register clearly hasn't made an impact.
And Julie, I think if it's on the Clark County Historic Register, I think that the Historic Preservation Commission has more purview over the things that happen there. So that's an important thing.
Absolutely. No, I don't disagree. But let's say they get it on the Historic Register, no problem, but they've already demolished two of those critical buildings. So are we asking them to do so before the demolition? And then, I mean, are we just saying do it at some point? I guess I'm just asking.
I don't think Andy and I said anything about doing it before the demolition. We just said that we wanted them to do that. Is that right, Andy?
Yes, that was my understanding, Michelle.
Okay.
So maybe we should just, instead of saying list three buildings, we need to be clear that it's the Academy site that we want.
And the Academy site and its remaining buildings, something mm-hmm. to that effect.
Yeah.
And wasn't this also an issue brought up in the DAP letter from a couple of months ago? I think it was one of their recommendations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we're just kind of following through on that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Julie.
Sorry. I'm just looking at the third bullet, collaboration between HPC and Historic Trust. I feel like that's a little soft touch. So when we say that, what are we saying? Because right now we are actually commenting on their mitigation plan, and we're already saying it's not sufficient.
I can speak to that one, Julie. This was my idea, and that came up during the course of Michelle and my subcommittee meeting. And my thought is that if the previously stated concern on the part of former Chair Alex Gall was that sometimes mitigation plans were put in writing, but they were never followed. And so my intent here on bullet point 3 was to collaborate with the Historic Trust so that we would be able to at least be on hand to help guide a mitigation plan to be effective. That if we have, and I think my original language was to partner with the Historic Trust staff to help carry out the mitigation plan to be sure that some of the concerns that have been addressed and put into place tonight were actually followed. Because if we send off our recommendation without any kind of longevity plan, this shows looking to the future. And that the Providence Academy project is going to go on for a long time. And if we avail ourselves to the Historic Trust, we show ourselves to be interested in helping the process along. And in so doing, it was my hope that we could positively influence that mitigation plan so that it was carried out as stated.
Thank you for that clarification.
Sure. So maybe it is a soft touch, but on some level, we're going to have to get along with the Historic Trust. And when a decision is made, it's going to be better if we have held out an olive branch to collaborate, as opposed to say, well, you didn't pay attention to our recommendations. And so I want to have a continuing relationship with the Historic Trust. And more to the point, I would like to continue a relationship because the Historic Preservation Commission could be one of the strongest advocates of being sure that a proposed mitigation plan is actually followed.
Sure, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean it to sound insulting when I said it was a soft touch.
Oh no, but
I'm sorry.
But I didn't want you to think that it was a. I didn't want you to think it was a fallback plan. I was thinking that, you know, this. However this comes out, this relationship between the commission and the trust is going to continue. And I wanted to make sure that we could have it on the most positive and collegial footing as possible. Mm-hmm.
My other question is about kind of along these same lines is to make this mitigation plan binding through a development agreement. And I think that's also really critical, right? If we make it binding, then that collaboration between us can be a little bit more equal footing, and that there is more of a collaboration rather than we're informing you and sorry if you don't like what we're informing you of. So I think that piece would, you know, obviously those are recommendations, but I think that one is really important to kind of solidify a future effective relationship that helps kind of mitigate those issues. I had one other, for this slide here, if we're talking, we've talked a little bit about this smokestack, should we have a separate section that we want to address that we've talked about? I think we've talked about a couple of things that we want to recommend for the smokestack mitigation. I know that we're kind of feeling like we're walking on eggshells a little bit around this because of the next meeting and, you know, some of the uncertainty around that, but I'm guessing, are you guys in agreement that we need to at least acknowledge some of the recommendations we would like to see for the smokestack? I think we mentioned a couple already. You said we talked about preservation, but, and then we also talked about, Michelle, you mentioned, which I think is a great plan, to do some other kind of, how did you put it? Like some type of remnant, I guess you could say, or using materials that are taken from the boiler and other buildings to kind of shore up that structure. And
yeah.
How did you?
You know, one of the
concerns, I mean, do we want to include those?
Well, one of the concerns that I think that we do need to include in this is what is the mitigation measures that should be there if in the sad event that the smokestack is demolished. You know, we don't want that to happen, but there is always the potential with the way the trust is headed that that could happen. You know, you just don't know what can happen. And this is our opportunity to provide mitigation on that. And so I do think that we need some very specific, you know, very detailed recommendations of what mitigation would be if that smokestack does end up being taken down. And so what I was saying was, you know, I was kind of tag teaming on your comments about that deconstruction plan. I like those comments about having a deconstruction plan by a qualified professional, and then using some of those materials to reconstruct a portion of the smokestack to give individuals an idea of the size and scale of the smokestack and what it looked like. I think that the thing is about 90 feet tall, and I'm not saying go 90 feet. Maybe you go up 20 feet, you build it up 20 feet. Maybe you only build like one side, part of the curve of it. Kind of have an open area and use those historic materials to build it. You know, they talk in their mitigation plan about having, as I said, a natural or artistic sculptural representation of the smokestack. Well, you know, why not just build it like it was using some of the historic materials? Don't build the whole thing, but build a portion of it. And so people can see the actual, get some sort of a feeling of the size and scale of what it once was.
Yeah. And again, employ a qualified professional to advise and guide, because it could be that they say, well, the top third doesn't need to be demolished at all, or the bottom part, you know, their expertise would lend us to know the best way to partially preserve that. So, yeah.
And then I would like to also, and this might have gotten in the other things, but I would like all of the materials that come from the deconstruction process, you know, if they're not reused at the Academy site, or if they're not put in some museum's repository to look at in future generations, if they're in somewhat good shape, I would like them, if there's nowhere else for them to go, I'd like them to be offered to the public.
Yeah. I agree. And there are many creative things that also could be done with them. And again, not just the brick. I know that they said they can't do another inventory. I think the last inventory, I want to say, was from 2017. They're going to fall back on old plans. But, you know, again, that deconstruction plan would be able to at least articulate, these pieces are in good condition, you know, we're going to remove them carefully. And, you know, all those things that we've talked about before, I won't rehash it, but I think that's something better than nothing. I would say on this slide here, I think the very first thing though, is that I think our hope and intention is to still preserve the smokestack in some other way. to find some other avenue to preserve that. Am I right with the other, or do the other commissioners agree with that as the first recommendation, since the smokestack will be coming up next time?
Well, I think we all agree that there doesn't seem to be enough information to, as far as the feasibility issue, definitely for me, I would like to see a much more balanced analysis of that issue. And that kind of goes to the heart of whether preservation is possible.
Really good point.
I just want to throw in a couple of other quick things. Just on the issue of, you know, what do we do if the smokestack ultimately is removed? I think it may almost be premature to try to figure that out right now, because, you know, if we all give it some more thought and we get more public input, I think there can be a lot of great ideas that come up beyond what we're coming up with. So I would suggest, if we get to that point, that there needs to be some other process where we figure that out, you know, and not just try to, you know, give the final answer tonight on that. I mean, one thing that just randomly came to mind for me is, you know, that street is basically the entryway into one of the city's historic districts, and the material from the smokestack could possibly be used to design a wayfinding landmark of some kind that identifies this as a key entry point into the historic district as a whole. And, you know, there's signs that are made all the time that incorporate historic features and materials, and the brick could be used in some way to create some kind of a wayfinding landmark for that historical district. But I'm not suggesting that we, you know, dictate that tonight, but I mean, that's just one example. There might be other ideas that people come up with down the line. So we should have an opportunity to weigh in on that if the time comes that we need to do that. I'm just going back to one of the public comments that we had earlier today about the precedent setting issue. And that's still kind of bothering me a little bit. And it's not easy to deal with, because we don't want to send the message that it's okay to just let, you know, historic structures deteriorate and then come in and basically throw your hands up in the air and say, well, it's unsafe, I've got to get rid of it. There has to be another, we have to send the message that that's not the appropriate way to handle these types of structures. And I'm not sure exactly how that message gets sent to make it effective. You know, it's done in different ways. But I think we do need to send a stronger message on that. One question I have is what would that area be used for in the future, where the smokestack is currently located? I haven't really seen any future plans for that portion of the site. Is that going to remain open space? I know the applicant talked about landscaping, but I don't know if we're talking about a small area or a large area. I mean, one way to send the message that, you know, you need to take care of these sites is to require that a certain portion of the site be maintained in perpetuity as open space with appropriate historical you know, markers and other you know, other materials that are reminiscent of the site. So I don't know, based on the applicant's submittal, if we're talking about 20 square feet, 100 square feet, a half an acre, I have no idea. But I know that if we want to send a strong message about our concern about this issue, it needs to be more than a few square feet.
Uh, I Jackie, can I ask a question of you and see if you can answer this question for me? Are you there?
Sure.
So, Jackie, my understanding, maybe I'm not understanding this process at all, but my understanding is if we want to have any voice in the mitigation measures for the demolition of the smokestack, we need to do it now. Or am I wrong on that?
Well, this is for the SEPA process, yes.
Yes, yes. But is there going to be another process that I don't know about off in the future where we'll have a chance to weigh in more on the mitigation measures?
Not that I'm aware of, only what your hearing would be on July 7th on the overall topic, right, of approving the demolition.
Okay. So this is the chance to get those mitigation measures in for the smokestack when it comes to SEPA and the process for that.
Yep, and I'd have the city staff weigh in if there's another process that I'm not aware of that would occur after the commission's role on the 7th.
And then this is a little bit of the city of Vancouver, and you're right, right? This is a, I mean, they're only open. So get any comments on mitigation.
Philip, we can't understand you.
Yeah, it's not working, Philip. You sound worse than Darth Vader here, so.
This is Jason. Hi guys, sorry about that. So there is opportunity as part of the demolition request, similar to what we did for the boiler and laundry, where we conditioned, you know, the SEPA to be done prior to the demolition being issued. I suppose you could look at applying conditions if the demo permit were approved for the smokestack. That could certainly be something you could discuss at that meeting on the 7th. But as far as comments related to the mitigation measures for SEPA and for all three of those structures, yes, those have to be submitted to the city prior to 4 p.m. on June 25th.
I mean, I know it's difficult for people to wrap their head around that smokestack could come down. I understand that. I don't want to see it come down. I would be, you know, very unhappy to see it come down. But if it does happen that it does come down, this is the place. Now is the time for us to say, we would like you to do these things. These are our best recommendations of how to mitigate for that. And I just feel like we're not, I have some concerns. We've talked a bit about it, but people are concerned and maybe now's not the time. So, I mean, I feel like now it needs to happen now, or we might lose a window of opportunity.
Tell me if you, well, so along the same lines of what Greg was talking about in terms of the wayfinding and finding some alternative creative ways to use these materials rather than leaving it open-ended and there's a lot of room for interpretation when it's like, we'll just, you know, we'll put them in their final resting place or what have you. Perhaps one of the considerations that we may want, one of the things we could recommend, and I'm just brainstorming now, given that we have to have a plan or at least recommendations put forward, is that public element. And one of the recommendations is that, I'm not sure exactly how to articulate it, but basically create some kind of public forum, maybe a public competition where people submit their ideas, or somehow an element where the public has a voice in what to do with that smokestack if that demolition does happen. So that it's not, like Greg was saying, his concern is that, you know, we're all limited by our own imaginations. And while there's, it's great that we're all bringing to the table ideas, it would be even better if we can have our whole community kind of have opportunity to participate. So would that be a recommendation you all would be interested in, is to create some kind of recommendation where the public is included, and that if the smokestack is going, that there's some type of buy-in, feedback, communication with,
or at least an opportunity for that.
Yeah, some kind of involvement with the public, that it's not just left up to the people who are going to demolish it.
And I'm gonna tag team on Greg's comments about that area of the smokestack. You know, they talk about in the supplement about what they would put there, the interpretive things that they would have there, and maybe this representation of the smokestack. But I think that I liked Greg's idea of, we would like to know exactly how big that area is going to be, that's going to be preserved for where the smokestack is, because it sounds like they're going to preserve that as open space. So we'd like to know how big that open space is going to be, and have some sort of a caveat that space is preserved as open space in perpetuity. Because it's kind of tempting, you know, when you can put an apartment building there and make a lot of money off that rent, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's definitely a worthwhile recommendation, I think. I also was wondering, I was reading these notes. In addition to like the wayfinding of, I think, again, going back to qualified professionals, I think historic preservationists may also have significant ideas or buy-in around practices on what has been done in other places as well, when buildings have not been able to be preserved, but they can salvage and reuse materials for some kind of public good. And so I would also maybe recommend that, you know, when we're discussing these public forum or recovered materials, that ultimately, you know, they loop in, they use resources of people who are professional, have that professional background, that can really make some solid recommendations or plan or what have you. But it's not just at anyone's whim. It actually has kind of a formal professional buy-in. But yeah, I think that's a really good point that Greg and you, Michelle, make, because I think we haven't really talked about that space. How much space is there? Because we have talked about in the past the different projects. I know I'm saying it wrong. Aegis 1, 2, and potentially 3, and that concern around those developments and how that's impacting this site, and that we want to, like you said, keep this as an open space in perpetuity.
So have we captured everything so far that's been discussed specifically regarding the smokestack on this slide? Do we need to, I wanted to clarify, do we need to reiterate regarding just the smokestack about a deconstruction plan? I think Greg had mentioned that. I know we have it on the first slide, kind of referring to the two buildings. Do you want it also specified for the smokestack?
I think so.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And similar things, you know, if we're asking for certain, sorry, Dan, do you mind going to the first slide really quickly? You know, if we're asking for insurances that, trying to see where we had it. You know, well, we were talking a little bit about, you know, what to do if we had to take the, if they have to take the smokestack down, how we could preserve parts of it or aspects of it, but also this binding development agreement. So if we're asking for these mitigation measures, that we're also asking for the plan to be a binding mitigation, not just we're asking these and they're just know, not really considered. So I think that one could be an important one as for the smokestack as well. What do you all think?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then we also, we mentioned the professional individuals to be included and involved. So we already mentioned that. Was there anything else on that first kind of piece that was essential? Let me just back through my notes.
Did we get the deconstruction plan? The deconstruction plan on the smokestack? Are we going to put that in there as well? Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. Thanks. Okay.
And what about the documentation of said structure? We haven't really talked about the documentation. I don't know if that would be as part of the HABs already. And so when they do that initial HABs documentation collection and all of that, if that's just for the two buildings or if the smokestack was part of their plan and they included it in the hours that individual was going to put. I don't recall. I could open the document again and see, but I think it's important that it also is part of the smokestack. We need all of that to be documented as well. You know,
I think mostly in the document, they talk about the laundry and the boiler building for the HABs. Okay. So that's a good point.
That. Yeah, so we'd need that too for the smokestack. And we already have it as, you know, obviously the site. So we're asking that it be put on the register. Let's see. So when we talk about the protection measures, is that language strong enough? Because I think that can you go back to that first? So that, yeah. So protection measures for remaining cultural resources. Okay. So like practical protection measures, like however they're that part of that demolition plan is how, you know, they're going to do that demolition while ensuring that they don't damage or cause or inflict any irreparable, damage to those remaining cultural resources. So it looks like it's also just that obligation to repair and restore if that ends up happening. I don't know about the smokestack, if that would impact anything, if we would need that as well. You know, there's that plan in place to repoint different brick on the academy. And I don't understand why I know that they've done different reviews, but is that not a possibility to repoint the smokestack? I know that doesn't make it seismically sound. Anyway, I'm just thinking off the cuff, but I think those are the critical things maybe to include for the smokestack. I've talked a lot, so do you guys have anything else? And I'll stop talking.
I'll admit, Julie, have I captured those pieces that you've just added so far? I feel like I might have missed one.
Let me just take a quick look. Oh, well, it says for all materials recovered in good shape and not to be reused in other future elements. I don't think we're saying that necessarily. I think we're saying we don't want it to go to landfill. We want it to be creatively used, and that includes the public having some kind of access as well as reusing it, as well as potentially having partial smokestack in place, or, you know, there's a whole variety of options. And again, that's where that consultation with the historic preservation professional or someone along those lines would have some important insight on the best way to move forward.
So perhaps, is this a recommendation to put underneath here?
You're still pretty garbled. It's
thank you all for the recommendation.
It's like you're inside of an Atari.
Philip, it might help if you
If you call by with your phone, perhaps if you're using your internet to, as your audio, you can change the audio to your phone and call in, and it'll connect okay. That way.
Okay, I'll give that a try.
Oh, you sound a little better there.
So the only thing I could see that's nuanced is we want the professional, the credential professional. And there's a variety of different options, but I feel like we want them involved in pretty much all of this mitigation, not just.
Well,
am I wrong?
I would like to remind colleagues that the Historic Trust and their SEPA report did designate Holly Chamberlain as the experienced preservationist who will be carrying out the mitigation plan. And Holly's well known to the commission.
Yeah.
And so,
but Andy, I think some of the concern was that I think she doesn't have some of the qualifications or formal training. I think what was being pointed out that there are individuals with more formal training and more qualifications to do that sort of work.
Okay, fair point.
And so the rest, so Michelle, Greg, and Andy, do you guys agree about that, moving that person kind of to an overall umbrella for these various recommendations, not just
sure. How
to reuse materials, but kind of the whole process of mitigating?
So put it at the top, the overarching first bullet there?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it even matters like where the bullet is, just that it's part of okay. This overall plan. It doesn't belong to one subgroup. And that there's that consultation and collaboration so that we have, you know, it's not just personal opinion, it's actually a professional credentialed individual who has this experience and this kind of backbone to their steps that they're helping take. That makes sense.
I just had a couple of things on the idea of the collaboration between the HBC and the trust staff. I think that's a great idea. Maybe we can add a little more flesh to the bone on that and suggest that a working group is formally established to oversee implementation of the mitigation and the monitoring plan. And that working group would include, you know, representatives from HPC, the trust, the city, you know, whoever else it is, and they basically oversee the implementation of the mitigation plan.
I think that's a really great recommendation.
And then just on the item about the open space, I think Dan wrote in there that the open space would be the area formerly occupied by the demolished buildings, but it might be more than that. So I don't want to just limit it to the size of the footprint of those demolished buildings.
What, how would we request that they measure that? In the sense, because it could be that we don't put anything in there and it's
right
nothing. I mean, I really liked also the recommendation that Sean had in his notes. It's only public comment I have. I'm sure there are others out there, but that the footprint can be maintained. There can be that type of kind of connection to the site. But neither here nor there, I just wonder if we should maybe make some kind of, I hear what you're saying. We don't want to limit ourselves, but we also don't want to leave it so open.
Greg, would you be amenable to saying, define an area of open space to be preserved in perpetuity, period?
Yeah, I think at a minimum that we would say that. And ideally, if we had more information, we could kind of, you know, probably come up with a more specific recommendation, but I just don't want us to be inadvertently limiting ourselves by just saying it's, you know, if they come in with an area that's the size of the smokestack, base that we're happy with that, because that's not very much.
Maybe in perpetuity that reflects the loss of historic resources, or I mean, could we
could you say right, something like
yeah, that exactly. That's kind of, because that's the concept here. We're trying to send the message that it's not okay to just neglect these structures and then come in and demolish them, and basically take away any other options. So, you know, we want to send a strong message that that's not the way to go. And then we want to, reflect that, you know, this is a very important, prominent historical resource that potentially is going to be removed. And there really needs to be a lot of thought put into compensating, you know, the public in terms of that lost public benefit. And so a plaque is great. You know, some podcasts are great, as they've discussed, some more educational outreach. But I think there needs to be a substantial portion of that site kept in open space, and have that open space integrated with these educational, pieces that were discussed, so that this is a place that the community can come to forever and recall what the site originally was and what the meaning of that site was and is to the community.
So would you say, what would you like to say then, preserved in perpetuity?
I like
not limited to, some kind of not limited to language.
I like what he said, it compensates the public. So it reflects that compensation for the kind of, I don't know, you said it really nicely, that it basically compensates the public for these things that were lost.
Yeah, and maybe the city
that quantity of space.
And maybe the city staff can give that some more thought, because, you know, in some areas they may just prescribe a ratio that says, okay, if the original area of potential effect was 5,000 square feet, it's going to be a 3-to-1 ratio, with that additional space intended to compensate the public for the loss of that resource. They may want to consult with some, historical professionals to come up with an appropriate recommendation. But I think it does need to be substantial, and it needs to be in perpetuity, and it needs to be integrated with the other educational pieces that were discussed in their mitigation plan.
Do we want to add that and is integrated with their current educational plans, or just leave it as it is?
That's up to the commission. I think they understand what we're after.
May I suggest that we say something like, define an area of open space to be preserved in perpetuity that compensates the public and reflects the loss? Because the way it stands now is we're reflecting the public.
And you're still going to be writing this in a form, is that right? We're not just going to go with exactly the words that are on here. So you'll still get some of massage this and, and make it clear.
Yes, that's correct.
Who is doing that?
I think that? Compensates the public for and reflects the loss of former historic structures. There you go. Thank you.
At the very top, preserve the smokestack, I think should just be a standalone statement. And if that is not possible, then require a professional, and we can say professional, but I feel like it's specifically a historic, for someone with a historic preservation specialty who knows how to kind of, this is a unique, this isn't an ordinary demolition. So it needs to have that angle on how to do so in a respectful and appropriate way. And yeah, so if it's not possible, yeah, it'll then require a historic preservation professional. Now, Andy, are you and Michelle working on the letter, or is that something our colleagues are doing at the Clark County level? Like, what's the, I thought I heard Becky suggest that first, so then we have that kind of second pair of eyes before it goes to our colleagues. I don't know.
No, sorry, this is Becky. I think the concern Jackie raised or was trying to respond to is any action taken by the commission, this is a public meeting, so any action you're taking needs to be taken during this public meeting. You can't, if you can take additional action on this matter later, but you would need to go through the public meetings process and provide notice and host another special meeting. So, and if the commission, and this is where I'm speculating and speaking somewhat out of turn, but if the commission wants to approve these recommendations and delegate the authority to write up and submit the documentation or the formal letter on behalf of the commission in accordance with these recommendations, it may be possible to delegate that authority to the subcommittee. And that might be an approach to not have to have another meeting. But if the commission then, if that actually involves a quorum or the entire commission, then I think you're getting in danger of the open, you know, violating the open public meetings.
I think what we could do is we could just, you know, have some sort of a motion that approves these things that have been written down in this PowerPoint presentation and ask Jackie to draft a letter based on these recommendations that's presented to the city of Vancouver. I think that's one thing we could pursue.
I like that idea. I do want to say though, I would like to incorporate some of the detail that was included in the public comment. We said that was acceptable. So
yeah. Well, everything, you just need to let us know what that is.
Well, everything in here has a twin, I guess you could say, has a partner. So I would say if we haven't captured it here, then incorporate what may not be fleshed out in the details here.
Okay.
Is my suggestion, but I of course also refer back to my colleagues if they agree. I think Andy and I agreed.
It's kind of a hard job for staff to figure that out. Can we just attach the complete letter to our letter and just say it was submitted and we were forwarding this on because we would also like, you know, the city to consider all of those comments as well, something like that. Then you don't have to figure out how to wordsmith it or take it apart.
My question would be, would it still have the same authority as the commission if we did that? Would they have to listen to that letter if it doesn't come from us?
Well, they have to listen to every letter. It's the SEPA comment period, so I don't think they have a choice.
I guess with that said, if I may, it sounds to me, what I'm hearing from you, Greg, is that there are two options in that one, the commission is operating as a member of the public in these draft comments. So with that, you could either incorporate elements of submitted public comment to the commission into your letter, or two, choose not to do that. And those individuals who have submitted public comment can provide that separately, or I guess the third would be to just provide them as attachments.
Right. Just forward it on with our letter and say, we received this comment and we also like it to be addressed and considered. Then staff doesn't have to try to read our minds to figure out which provisions should be included in our letter, unless there's something particular we want to just pull out of the letter now and just tell staff make sure you include X, Y, and Z.
I'll just say, I think that when the letter's being drafted, like you said, Dan, I think, you know, these are just the high level bullets just to kind of get a gist. So I would just, you know, whoever is writing the final letter to just sort of reflect on the other resource to help fill in any blanks that may be maybe there. And when I say that, I don't mean for you to read our minds. I mean, if there's something that we say here and it's documented more thoroughly, then go ahead and add that thorough documentation. But we all agree that the comments reflect all of our thoughts and reflections on this issue. So I don't think you can go wrong with whatever you select, or whatever's easiest, I guess. They can also be an attachment. So ultimately.
Well, what I'll suggest is that go back to kind of the committee's role with Dan and I putting together what we think with what you guys have looked at today and talked about, have the committee review it and wordsmith what you want to wordsmith as the committee has been authorized to do. And then we'll go from there if that works for everyone. And we know, I think we all know now what the commission wants as part information to be part of those comments. And then the committee can establish kind of the format of that and how best to do that. Does that work for everybody?
Yeah, and I took I'll say yes. And I took a quick look.
Okay.
I think that the part that that is fleshed out in more detail that I personally couldn't speak to, but I appreciate that it was spoken to, is that professional credentials section. It's fleshed out in more detail, that's clearer in clearer language than I've particularly provided during our call. And so that piece, I think, would be very helpful to incorporate.
Okay, sure.
But for my part, yes, all sounds good. Thank you, Jackie.
Okay, yeah. And Greg and Michelle and Andy, are you good with that approach? We had noticed that the last time.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, after this kind of note that we're jotting down, anything else? Have we gotten everything that's not already on here?
So I think I'd like I'd like to entertain a motion that would formalize this, and the kind of the point of the whole meeting was to hammer together a more informed kind of proposal and list of recommendations to the city. And so we want to make sure that we get all the points into the motion, and if we get a second, then we can discuss it. And then, sorry?
You just motioned, right? I said
No, I can't. I'm supposed to be chairing this meeting.
Okay. I'll motion that we move forward with the recommendations as we have put forward today.
And what are we going to do with it?
Second.
And we're going to submit it. Sorry. Sorry, it's been a long call.
If I understand Julie's motion, she has moved that we will submit the draft recommendations as outlined on the cards in front of us to the City of Vancouver on behalf of the Historic Preservation Commission.
Just a clarification. I thought we were going to take what's on the screen, give it to county staff. They're gonna take a run at it, and then give it to the subcommittee, and then the subcommittee will finalize it. Is that right?
So is that your friendly amendment to Julie's motion?
Yes, sure.
Yes. I'm sorry, I did not make a very good motion.
I have a point of clarification. Don't we need to approve what we've, as a point of clarification, don't we need to approve what we've talked about here on these two slides and have the commission's approval for that? Don't we need
to? Well, the motion is that we recommend the spirit and letter of the draft recommendations. That
can I withdraw my recommendation? Let's just start fresh. I withdraw. Let's start fresh.
All right.
We'll start fresh.
Because I think Michelle's point is well taken. but this is why we want to make sure we have a clear and cogent motion.
So let's start fresh with the appropriate motion.
Okay, well, I'll give it a try. So I guess what I would say is that that I make a motion that that we approve these draft recommendations that are proposed in relation to SEPA mitigation measures and that staff will, I don't know where to go after that. Can someone help me? Do I say that staff will consolidate the letter, the subcommittee will take a final look at it for approval, and then it would be forwarded onto the city? Does that work?
So if I understand Michelle's motion, she has moved that the Historic Preservation Commission approves the elements of the draft recommendations proposed on the cards before you and will refer them to staff, who will put those recommendations in the form of a letter to the City of Vancouver regarding the Providence Academy SEPA report, and that the subcommittee will review and approve the staff report so that it may be submitted to the City of Vancouver in advance of the June 25th deadline.
Good job, Andy.
Second.
Okay. Now I can't make that motion. Hi, Jackie.
I just want to make sure you guys are getting in everything you want here. Did you want to include anything regarding the public comments that you've received and incorporate those as appropriate or something? Should that be part? I just want to make sure everyone gets what we've talked about during this discussion. Okay, that's all I have to say.
Amend it to include what you just said, which is that we will include public comment where it adds to and embellishes on any of our recommendations in an appropriate way, something to that effect. But they should be included. Do we need a second to that?
Is there a second?
Okay.
Greg has seconded. So it's been moved and seconded that the information included on the cards as composed this evening by the Historic Preservation Commission, that not limited to public comment, will be collated and distilled by Jackie and returned to Michelle and Andy, and will be returned to Michelle and Andy for a final review prior to a submission that will be timely in relationship to this June 25th deadline that we do not want to miss. And I will spare you my verbiage of leaving no stone unturned or avenue of remedy exhausted. So we have it's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Because this is very important that we all leave this meeting tonight with a sense that we did everything we could to get the mitigations for the Providence Academy SEPA plan reviewed. And I think everybody's done a wonderful job, but I would be happy if we could leave this meeting feeling like we made every effort to pursue our goal that has been before us for several years now. All in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
It seems to be a unanimous voice vote, so we will say this motion is approved, and that Michelle and I will be awaiting the return of Jackie's compilation, and we'll make sure that our comments and approval are indicated in time to get the response posted with the city. Anything for the good of the order? Jackie, can we invite Sean back now?
Oh, yes.
There he is.
All right.
I am handing the gavel metaphorically off to you. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Andy, for your leading of the commission through this complicated topic. That is all of our agenda items for the evening. So with that in mind, unless there are further items, speak once, speak now, or forever hold your peace. We are at 8:05.
I would like to thank Michelle for her service and her diligence on this issue. She was the driving force behind the special meeting, and I appreciated her leadership. And Sean, thank you for your service. It's good to see you one more time. It's a pleasure that I didn't anticipate 2 weeks ago.
Well, I will now adjourn this bonus, give this bonus adjournment to the for this meeting. Thank you all for your service tonight. Thank you all for your time. And I will be seeing you at future meetings. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks, Julie.
Thanks, Michelle. And thanks, Greg.
Thanks,
bye, everybody.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Jackie. Thank you, Greg.
Thanks, everyone.